Everyone, welcome to the Incubator Podcast. I'm your co-host, Aaron Boyd.
And this is Sabir Sran. Welcome again. We are excited to have DTEX and Brian Stoner, who is our VP of Worldwide Alliances for DTEX, joining us today to talk about the platform. Now, DTEX, at the highest level, Series D company, about $70 million raised thus far. Solving the workforce cyber intelligence and security domain space, looking at the internal indicators of compromise without actually sacrificing privacy of individuals. That's maybe complicated. We hope to unpack that, but for topics like DLP, UEBA, insider threat, all relevant here. Really excited to talk about this domain. It is relevant to every organization out there. Welcome, Brian. If you wouldn't mind just sharing a little bit more about yourself, and then we'll dive right in.
Yeah, sure. So thanks so much for having me today. I really appreciate the opportunity. As you said, I'm Brian Sturm, the Vice President of Worldwide Channels and Alliances. So what that means is I deal with all of our partners, right? Whether it's a resale partner or a partner that does consulting, or even the technology alliances that we have with people like CrowdStrike and Splunk. So keeps me very busy.
That's great. So Brian, I thought we could start with just an alignment question. So oftentimes existing threat frameworks that work well for external adversaries are often inappropriate for internal threat actors. Can you talk a little bit about why this space exists, why IRM exists, and why is this different? Why is an insider different, or should we treat them differently than maybe an APT? Maybe a little bit of that to start with is a good alignment.
I'll kind of start with what's happened the last few years that I think is really driving awareness for this right now, because there have been insider risk programs in a lot of large customers for quite some time now, but it's kind of coming to the forefront because of what we've seen in the broader market, right? A few years ago, we had COVID, right? And COVID pushed a lot of people that used to be on the network out into their home offices on their cable modems. And the interesting thing about that is, you know, obviously they're not down the hall anymore. I can't go look in their office and see if they're working, but I also don't have any more network visibility to that user anymore, right? So there was a big tailwind for EDR for about 2 years. So CrowdStrike and SentinelOne and those guys, man, they just took off. So those tools are great, but they still don't give you that full visibility, right? And I think, you know, that's where DTEX kind of started becoming more well-known, because we kind of provide that flight recorder of everything that happens on that endpoint that gives that visibility back to the SOC and back to the teams that are trying to manage this, right? So that was kind of the first piece. Now we've kind of shifted where we've got hybrid workforces and we've got, you know, mass layoffs and, you know, I think what customers are starting to realize now is, if I lay off 10,000 people, am I going to lose anything? Right? That's a huge issue, because none of the security controls that we've built in the last 20 years were designed to answer that specific question. And by having that flight recorder and also having the file lineage that we've developed, we not only follow the users, but we can follow every piece of data they touch. So I don't know about you, but you know, when I left my last job, I maybe saved a couple of old contacts or maybe a deck that I was really proud of, right? But you know, we've seen people who've left, you know, major technology companies and started whole new technology companies that stole proprietary data. And you know, when we think about DLP, you know, that helps you catch, you know, things like credit card numbers and, you know, things that are fields in spreadsheets that are easy to look for, but they don't help you stop the theft of proprietary data. And I think a lot of customers are finally coming to the conclusion that we need to, you know, understand that a little bit better. But, you know, I think really, you know, beyond that, the core challenge, and this is a challenge that Gartner talks about when they talk about zero trust too, is that when you have an employee, you got to give them some level of trust so they can do their job, right? But you know, it has to be a trust but verify relationship, right? So that's where having that flight recorder, you can trust your employees all day long, but if they violate that trust, we have to know exactly what they did when they violated that trust and be able to take an appropriate action, right? And I think that's a whole separate topic in and of itself.
So if we may then, because there's so much in that.
We just unpacked a lot right there. Yes,
it is. And it's so very powerful. But one of the things, so you're drawing a distinction between an insider risk management program versus surveillance, because to your point, you may have a flight recorder, but you've also gone to extra lengths to ensure that the privacy of the individual is respected. You're anonymizing data, et cetera. But what are some of the distinctions between building this as a program and still walking that fine line about privacy concerns, legal concerns, et cetera? What is your view on that space?
Well, so I think as these larger customers mature their programs, what they're starting to realize is that it's very difficult with a diverse technology stack to be able to monitor for the behaviors that they want to monitor for, right? When you build that insider risk program and you're trying to change the culture of the company where when people see something, they say something, right? You have to have an ability to monitor the things that you want them to see and to be able to track those things, right? And the journey that most of our customers have been on before they met DTEX was one of, well, I've got my, you know, DLP tool, which is supposed to stop proprietary data from being, you know, stolen. But in the last 20 years, DLP has never stopped a major breach. Okay. Well, that was a great technology. Then, you know, when Obama came out with some of the regulations for the government for user activity monitoring, you know, key logging and screen captures and things like that, screen recordings, you know, that technology is really heavy on the endpoint. You know, like if my machine started slowing down, it's probably because somebody's monitoring me, right? So that even tells the bad guys, hey, stop what you're doing. But at the end of the day, you're storing all that data that you don't need, all those screen captures, all those recordings, and they're all trigger based. So if I can't proactively figure out exactly what you're going to do before you do it, I may never capture it in the recording, right? And then you think about things like, you know, UEBA, which was the approach of, well, you know, let's do this agentless. We're just going to bring a bunch of data into our SIM and we're just going to magically throw AI on top of it. And we're going to be able to figure out what's going on. Well, you know, most of those projects started 2 or 3 years ago, and they're lucky to have 10 or 15 use cases where that they can really monitor to support their policies, right? But with DTEX, what we've done is we've built over 300 behaviors into the platform out of the box. And because we correlate all those different threat vectors, they don't have to figure out and be the human glue for that anymore. We do that for them. And so when you talk about MITRE and the different frameworks, when we do a proof of value with a customer, we actually go over the MITRE framework and say, okay, what are the behaviors you want to monitor for, right? And we highlight those boxes and we say, okay, this is going to be the scope. And then we're going to show you how we can detect all this during the POV, right? And then after they're done, we say, okay, did we meet the controls? Yes. What other controls do you need? Can you do them? Yes. Great. Let's do a deal. Right. So it, and we can do that in 3 weeks, not 3 years, you know, which is, has been kind of the experience for a lot of customers up to this point.
Again, Brian, I think you said quite a bit there in terms of the evolution of the space. So you got the industry themes of what's been happening the last, since let's call it the COVID era and the changing patterns and dynamics there. Now we talk about, the DLP state of things, which, again, to your point, it came and went, but you never really felt that you heard or thought of it preventing any breaches or actual data loss. But it was just a flag that went off for any particular file, whether it was damaging or not, but it wasn't really capturing maybe that proprietary data leakage or prevention or any of these other kind of maybe larger breaches. So organizations, though, you know, because I think some of maybe perhaps the sophisticated enterprises at some point or another figured that a lot of this was not very helpful in terms of the COT space. They tested some UEBA-like or DLP-like scenarios home and then built up. And because it didn't really, wasn't effective, they decided to do this homegrown, platform of their own, yeah. which you know, you had to collect all sorts of data and then build your own data models and run kind of train your appropriate machine learning models to be effective. Now, I think there was either the risk of false positives still, or even false negatives, because you didn't necessarily know if you had all the data right to say that this wasn't a threat, but in fact, actually, it really was. Could you speak a little bit more of those organizations that were focused on these programs internally, and how some of them are shifting over to DTEX as I guess the overall maturity of your platform?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think as customers try to implement those use cases, right, the vendors tell them, "Oh yeah, we got the easy button for this. Just get all the data in there, and we'll figure it out," right? And so that's where it's like, you know, it's part of a broader portfolio that you're buying from your SIM vendor or somebody like that, right? The challenge is, understanding human behaviors is really different than understanding technical alerts. Okay. Alerts, either something happened or it didn't, right? And we can use binary rules to detect that, you know, did somebody fail to log in more than 10 times? Alert, right? Or we can use machine learning. Bob usually fails to log in 3 times on Monday morning because he's hungover from the weekend. And now, he failed to log in 20 times on a Wednesday. Either he's got a real drinking problem now, or we need to do something different for Bill, right? So what they're finding out is, it wasn't as easy as the vendor said to create these rules from scratch, unless you have data scientists on staff that understand how to translate human behavior into technical alerts, right? Mm-hmm. I think what they're now realizing is that the other challenge is dealing with all those diverse data sets. Everything's in a different format, right? Whether you're pulling in Windows logs from every machine, Sysmon is one of the noisiest log sources on the planet today. I used to work for an XDR company before I joined DTEX, and if you talk to any one of the partners that we supported, 80% of the logs they stored in their SIM on a regular basis were Sysmon. And 90% of those Sysmon logs arguably don't really have forensic value from a security perspective, right? So then the conversation becomes, well, what is the appropriate data set? What is the best way to get the right data in so that then we can map it to different behaviors and get to that use case result, right? And so what DTEX does is we capture all those alerts from, the things that we detect on the endpoint and other things that are in the environment. We can pull in the logs from Office 365 and Netskope and, CrowdStrike and other things, right? But we're enriching it with this really clean data set that we've, figured out how to extract from every machine and every server, so that we can create that picture. And that picture is a risk score, right? And the risk score is really just the sum of all those different alerts, but we put different weights on those different activities so that the risk score goes higher for certain things, or maybe not quite as much for other things. But at the end of the day, now I'm able to say, Brian was good yesterday, but today, he's downloaded 1,000 documents. He's put them into an archive file. He's zipped it, encrypted it, and renamed it. And he's trying to send it out through webmail. You know, that's not what Brian normally does. And now we can start to figure out those behaviors. And within the DTEX platform, we can create different levels of trust. So once you violate a certain level of trust, then we can start instrumenting controls to, you know, either stop you from doing what you're doing, educating on what you should be doing differently, or, you know, whatever action really needs to be taken. And again, when we're taking these actions, we're not talking about an alert at the SOC. We're talking about somebody in HR who now has an employee that is potentially a legal risk, and they have to take some sort of action. And now you've got to bring in that employee's manager and legal. And so with these risk scores, it's kind of a summary of all of their behaviors that is easily digested by the business, not just IT.
Yeah, if you're comfortable with it, I want to restate it back as well. Just one, to crystallize my understanding, but also because I think there's a couple of really, really, really important things that you recognize with that. So one is just tying together some themes that Sabir was talking about as well. We're talking about psychosocial behavior. Mm-hmm. And that's complex because, to the earlier point, if I'm building my own in-house capability, I may have data scientists and I may be able to look at various data inputs, but I don't necessarily have behavioral specialists. And exactly. You're very active with MITRE, and I know they're coming out with their own insider risk framework. Mm-hmm. When you look at MITRE going through this process, they have brought in behavioral scientists to help with this. Mm-hmm. You have all of these behavioral aspects in that psychosocial construct. So you're not just looking at all of these data inputs, you're looking at behavioral anomalies. I think if I understand it correctly, you map everything together, you anonymize that data, again, protecting the privacy of the user. You don't need to say that Sabir is doing anything until we determine that a risk or trust threshold has been broken, and then we'll resolve that hash or that user is in fact Sabir. Not that Sabir would do anything wrong. But so what we're really saying is your behavioral modeling is one of the core tenets of what makes DTEX so powerful. Your adherence to privacy is what makes it not a surveillance. And even the way you collect that data, very, very low touch metadata coming out of those endpoints. This isn't heavy, heavy data flow, as you said earlier. So it's very small amounts of data coming out for that metadata to construct these maps. Is that a fair way? Is that characterized properly? And that's why, this is why you need DTEX. This isn't just data scientists. This is behavioral modeling. Mm-hmm. It's anomalous detection. It's thresholds. And then it's curated action after that. Is that a fair way to look at it?
That's definitely a fair way to look at it. And just to support what you just shared, I think we did a study with MITRE that was a year-long study about 2 years ago. And they have over 10,000 employees. And they invited, you know, DTEX and all of our competitors to do a study with them of monitoring insider risk, right? And so they instructed 200 of their employees to act as malicious insiders during the study. And what they did is they compared the efficacy of our approach as a risk score with the alerts of the other technologies, right? And what they found was an alert on average had about a 30% efficacy rate, but our risk score was over 90% accurate every time, right? So, and so because of that, and because they know that we have a lot of large customers, we're actually doing the research together with MITRE today to build that insider risk framework that has the behaviors so that you'll have not only the MITRE attack framework, but you'll have this insider risk framework that will parallel that and have all the behaviors that are unique to risky insiders versus what tactics an external attacker might use, which is kind of what MITRE attack framework was designed to do.
That is very powerful altogether here. So I'm really excited, Brian, to, you know, have this conversation. And again, having some exposure to it in the past, But going back to a little bit of what we talked about earlier, with the organizations that did attempt these in-house programs and that didn't have the behavioral, let's say, algorithms and intelligence that, that DTEX has built up, and they're at an inflection point today, how does DTEX like fit in to their internal, call it analytics program, right? So everybody's still going to collect data or have some like data lake. As Darren mentioned, you guys take a subset of that data, or you were talking about it as well, from all of these things. Do you guys become the focal point of data collection, or you overlay on top of theirs, or sit in parallel so an organization effectively can carry on with whatever kind of scientific experiments they want for internal purposes, but DTEX is also providing its value? How does that maybe architecture or application look like?
Yeah, so in a more mature customer that's already invested in the other platforms, typically there's a series of use cases that would necessitate somebody like DTEX coming in. A great example was one of the large banks that we work with. They wanted to monitor employees that were off network and off VPN, because at that point they had lost all kind of visibility, but these employees still had, you know, bank customer data and important data on their machines, right? And so at the time, the customer was a little concerned because they already had like seven agents on every endpoint, right? I mean, they were using DLP, they were using, you know, Tanium, they were using UEBA. I mean, they were using all this stuff. And so, you know, in a large customer like that, it's also politically challenging to come in and rip and replace everything at once, right? Mm-hmm. But what we saw over 4 years was once they got comfortable with the visibility that they received from our platform, they started sunsetting some of the other technologies as their renewals came up. Right.
Sure.
And so eventually we got to the point where now they've standardized on DTEX, Splunk, Palo Alto, and CrowdStrike. Right. So kind of a traditional next gen stack of technologies, but that streamlined set of technologies does what 12 technologies did in the past. And it does it at scale globally on over 750,000 endpoints every day.
Yeah. So there's definitely a rationalization opportunity, whether it's immediate or over time. And that's compelling in of itself from an organization. You get the benefit of the protection of this platform, cost savings as well beyond that. But just to go a tad deeper on the architecture, if you have a data lake, right, if an organization is collecting all their data or telemetry, you know, call it everything logging, does DTEX just pull from that data lake and then do its magic appropriately? How does that kind of maybe work?
Yeah, no, I mean, security is like anything in life, right? It's garbage in, garbage out. And, you know, unfortunately, because of all the different data sources and there are all those different formats and everything, we just didn't find a way to use existing logging to do what we do efficiently and correctly. Right. So we created this really lightweight log forwarder. Everyone likes to call it an agent. It is something that installs on every device and server. But what that is doing, it's not cracking open files. It's not keystroke logging. It's not doing anything that does any, you know, thing significant to the CPU. As a matter of fact, we use less than a half to 2%. half a percent to 2% of the CPU at any given point in time. And all we're doing is we're collecting over 500 different data source data sets at any given point in time when there's action at the kernel level, right? Okay. So whether you go to a website or, you know, heaven forbid you're an attacker and you load a Z drive, you know, or you do some of these other bad things, right? We capture everything at the kernel level. Even if it's a piece of malware that starts doing something, we've got all the metadata on everything that that piece of malware did, right? So we batch that up and we encrypt it and we send it back to our platform every 60 seconds. And the net net of it is, because we're just pulling metadata we only store 3 to 5 megs per day per endpoint. Now you compare that to Sysmon, and it is, you know, 1/10 of what Sysmon pulls in a day. So that's why we're able to do it, you know, much more efficiently. Now, when you have a customer that wants to store all that data and has a large forensics team that wants to have it all, you know, off in a data sink somewhere, we can do that too. We can either send raw data out, we can send our enriched data out, or we can send the alerts themselves, whether it's to a SIM, a ticketing system, or a data sink. We give the customer that flexibility to choose how they want DTEX to integrate into their existing ecosystem.
Yeah, certainly lightweight, which is really helpful in this, you know, in our kind of explosion of data. But I want to go back to, you know, everybody's good at hindsight or ex post. We can always look back and say, oh, okay, in hindsight, yeah, Jim looked pretty disheveled the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Or Bob or whoever. But we don't normally, at the time, we're not able to usually do anything with that, right? Oh, they're just having a bad time, but we didn't expect X to happen. You're now getting close to ex ante, where we can almost predict that, hey, based on all this data collection, we think that something's taking place, and it's an indicator of intent. And now somebody can action it. So wow, that makes a big difference, especially when we're talking behaviors. Now, when we come back to how do we start seeing value when we put this in? So if you're doing a POV or a POC with somebody, or if you're just introducing the product, we just said we can introduce it very quickly, but how long does the product really need to start looking at behaviors and determining what an intention could be based on that learning process? Is that a few weeks? Is that a few months? What would that look like?
It's actually about a week. So there's multiple behavioral detections built into the platform, right? But what we do is we baseline different things. So for instance, you know, if you are part of the sales team, right, we'll compare your activities to the rest of the sales team. And we'll compare your, you know, activities to your normal pattern of activities. Like, when do you normally log in the morning? When do you normally log off, right? But then we can also compare it to the broader organization, right? What's the average, you know, for the organization? And within that, then we can start to see deviations from norm. But this, it's not a point in time thing either, right? Machine learning learns all the time. As we're going through the POV process, typically after about a week, you know, we'll start seeing those behavioral detections. But after about 2 weeks, it'll start percolating up behavioral issues with certain individuals or machines, right? And then after 3 weeks, we usually wrap up with a report, and, you know, we can meet all the use cases that we committed to on the MITRE ATT&CK framework in 2 weeks, typically. So it's not a year-long project to develop, you know, the detections, get them implemented, and then show value, which has been the experience with a lot of the SIM providers. This provides value right away, right out of the box.
With that, Brian, in terms of who do you find are the key stakeholders? It goes back to maybe your financial institution example as well, where they had, during COVID, they had end users that were off the network, off the VPN, and also the instrumentation has to happen at the device level. Certainly the initiative is security driven, but it feels like it's also maybe end user compute organizations as well. How's that come to together in your experience? I know each organization might be different, but in terms of bringing them together, where do you see it typically start from? I imagine still security and risk management and the themes like DLP, all that good stuff. But sometimes you're talking across organizational aisles. How do you bring it all together?
Well, so, you know, a lot of times we do get called in, right, when there's a DLP renewal, or, you know, they're frustrated with a particular UEBA vendor, or, you know, user activity monitoring isn't working as well as they wanted it to. And that's kind of where we come in a lot of times on the technical side. But it's when you start to get into speaking with HR and helping them understand how they're going to help enforce policy and monitor policy, something they really haven't had a chance to do yet, gets very interesting for them. When you talk to the legal team, one of the things that I didn't mention about the log forwarder is that it's tamper proof. If somebody even looks at it in the directory that we put it in, we alert. If they try to uninstall it, it silently reinstalls itself. So from a legal perspective, we have a full chain of evidence that they can use in a court of law, which we've actually done in Australia. We've got some use cases of a Chinese national that was a contractor that was stealing information from the Australian government. And they were actually able to prosecute him based on that secure string of data that we can provide, right? So, I think from there, the governance, risk, and compliance teams are involved at some level, helping with the policy and compliance. They're the ones who are usually concerned about anonymization so that we're meeting all their privacy requirements, right? With GDPR and some of the new California legislation, everybody wants to make sure that the user is anonymized. And the reason that's important is so that there's no bias at the SOC, right? When something happens, we don't want to have bias right away. So and in a lot of cases, if they haven't done something yet that requires legal action, you have to let it run for a little bit, right? And you have to put a higher lens on it. But then you have to collect all that data, and then HR and the user's manager can unlock the identity before the username and the MAC address and the IP address and all that stuff is visible. And so that's a patented process that we developed years ago when we were headquartered in Europe.
Well, Brian, we thank you for sharing so much about DTEX, very compelling platform. Really excited to be working with you guys. We hope that our listener base and beyond reaches out to one of us and to support some of these discussions in greater detail as we move forward. Really excited to see this platform come out again and the evolution in this space. It's phenomenal in terms of everything we've seen to date.
Yeah. So one of the things that we're working on that you'll start to see coming out, I think our first one's going to be on April 11th, but we're working with our partners to do workshops for these insider risk teams so they can learn more best practices and things like that, because it's not a science, right? It's not a detection that you can prove that you did or you didn't do. It's more about, how do you handle a situation where an employee's gone rogue, right? How do you provide incentive for employees to say something when they see something? It's simple little things like that. Or, what are the things that you should do to protect yourself before you do a major layoff, right? So these are some of the topics that we're going to talk about over the course of the year. We're going to do a quarterly cadence on this, because some of our partners actually do have insider risk practices where they help mature programs and do things like that. So we want to build a broader community this year of the insider risk professionals. And part of the reason we're doing that is, even according to Gartner, this particular area is going to grow. Today, about 10% of enterprise accounts have this. In the next 2 years, 50% will have it. Wow. So this is a huge trend right now. It's a huge opportunity for partners, for customers, for DTEX to, really do this right the first time. A lot of our customers had to learn the hard way, but we want to help them do it right the first time. So we're going to continue to add these types of things to be able to interact with our prospects, our customers, and start building a community for this as well.
Yeah, we certainly appreciate the partnership, Ryan.
Yeah,
we look forward to doing more with you in this coming year.
Yeah, I'll be in touch in terms of learning everything you just said, and then so supporting DTEX further. Yeah, we are truly excited in terms of partnering up with you guys.
Yeah, and we're excited too. Thank you so much for having me today.